Hey everybody, NYPD Blue Balls, this episode, Season 1, Episode 10, Oscar Meyer Wiener, nailed it. I'm here, Kirk, and Kyle's in New York, but on the iPad through FaceTime.
No, I'm in New Jersey. We've moved.
You've moved to New Jersey?
Yeah. I'm living with the boss.
I thought you were living in Holbrook. So this opens with a case. We're getting back to cases, which is awesome.
A case.
I like when they do cases on the show. It's so much better. They open up and it's a woman on a porch and they're talking to her about...
Wait, can you be more specific? Like, is it like a case of beer?
No,
a case you put a body in.
I'm so glad that we got the annoying... I'm so glad we got the annoying version of you right now. I'm so glad.
So, okay, we can skip a lot of this because this isn't even the important parts of the episode. So,
no, it's just as important.
So, talking to a maid, the house has been robbed, and I guess the people who live there were cut up and killed really badly.
Yeah, and raped. Raped, and then after they were dead, they stuck shit into their orifices, if you paid attention. And they sliced them up, and they're horrible butchers of human beings.
Yeah.
So they get the case, and they find it's possibly connected to a bunch of cases just like it up in the Bronx.
Well, the whole time Kelly was talking to that maid, he was acting really weird, I thought.
Well, I think it's because of what they saw. I think that's the implication. Okay. Because even Sipowicz came down and said, I don't know, John.
Like, yeah, that is true.
And the maid was even acting a little bit out of it. And what we come to find out about her, because spoilers, they spend this whole time looking for certain people, and they find out it was the maid who had her drug dealer come by the apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that, I guess this is a burning question or a deep question, do you think she was high on whatever she took when she was talking to them?
No, because I don't think it happened then. I think what happened was, like, at one point he called her drug dealer over to get drugs, and so then he sold it later. I think it was like a weak scenario.
Yeah, but I'm saying, if she is a drug user and she has a drug problem, do you think she saw what she saw, and before she called the police she got high? Because she couldn't handle it.
No. I think she got to the place and called the police.
All right. Well,
I think that conversation she was having, I think she realized, like, oh shit, this could be on me.
Because, I don't know, she seems so out of it and so disconnected. I thought, when you find out she is a drug user, I thought...
Well, that goes to your point, the way Kelly was acting, because if she saw how they were, she'd be affected and kind of be like, whoa. Because even though she'd be kind of like, oh, fuck. Like, what did I just see? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Even if she doesn't think she had anything to do with it because of the drug dealer, it'd still be fucked up to walk in and see that.
Yeah. Especially even though you've had drugs delivered there, these people are, like, close to you, you know?
Mm-hmm. So they have that case going on.
Then Lestarza tells Lukowski that she needs to run the plate and work for this Richie guy, because he basically, like, gives her a hard time. He's like, you didn't say that you were working for this Marino, so now you gotta work for this guy to repay your debts, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna make you go fucking crazy.
And he basically, because her big problem, and the way she fails in this, she doesn't make sure that there isn't any other official documentation that she's doing this for him.
Yeah.
Because when you have a situation where now you have to work undercover, this guy now has sensitive information, you want to make sure to get your fucking ducks in a row so that if the shit goes down, he doesn't just go, I don't know what she's talking about. She never spoke to me about this.
Yeah.
And basically, he tells her, look, here's what you did wrong, and here's what you're gonna do.
And then doesn't she at one point say, I want to go over specifics. I want an end date.
Yeah, exactly. She does.
Yeah.
And he says,
like, well, I need to see what happens, and we'll play it out. We'll go by ear.
And she said, yeah, but I want this thing to be over when I'm done with this guy. I don't want to continue.
Yeah.
And he says, that's what I said, isn't it? And that isn't what he said. So basically, he's just an asshole, is what we've learned from that scene. He's just a dick who's out for...
Well, you saw how he hung Sipowicz out to dry.
And yeah, Sipowicz got straight shot by Girardella.
So then they're working in the station, trying to solve this crime.
Mm-hmm.
And something's wrong with Kelly.
Yeah, Sipowicz can tell.
Acting emo and shit, and so he leaves. And while he leaves, this guy comes in, wants to talk about something that was stolen. So Sipowicz takes it, find out he's like an Oscar winner.
He's an Oscar winning writer.
And he got his Oscar stolen.
He also has his face torn up, like he was beaten to shit, but he's not addressing it.
Yeah, And he basically tells Sipowicz that he took some young kid home from a gay bar and...
Fucked him,
and then the guy beat him up or stole his Oscar.
Mm-hmm. And he's not super upset about it. He's more upset that the Oscar's gone.
Yeah. And Sipowicz has my favorite line where he says... I forgot how he starts it off, but it ends with... that he whipped his Skippy while looking at your Oscar.
Oh, no. He's like, I'm not concerned of who's whipping their Skippy looking at your statue.
Your Oscar.
No, it's a really cool scene because you have this character who's like an erudite.
And he's such a homophobe.
Well, I don't know about that. I wouldn't say he's a homophobe, really, in this situation.
When the guy says that the person who stole from him has a piercing on his balls, the look Sipowicz gives him is like...
I don't think that's homophobic.
The look he gives him is don't talk that gay shit around me.
No, I disagree with that. I thought
you're
his look...
You're such an apologist.
No, I thought
you're
he...
such an apologist.
No, I thought he looked at him kind of like...
Okay, C.S. Lewis. Okay.
No, I thought he looked at him and said... Like, with that look he gave him, like, are you fucking serious? His balls are pierced together? Like, what? Okay. Like, okay, I was dealing this morning with... multiple homicides with four black men, and we have no real leads, and we can't find anything. He's scatterbrained. So then he gets this other guy coming in, very richy, talking guy, very erudite, from a different social spectrum.
Wow, big words.
Different social sphere than Andy Sipowicz. He sits down, finds out he's like an award-winning writer. He knows who he is. He's seen him before.
Yeah, because he says he likes the book he wrote about cops.
I think his name was Alan... What was it? Allard Rickman?
I don't know.
Clearly just took Alan Rickman's name and changed, like, one letter. But he won an Oscar and, like, he stole it. But the way he's talking to Andy is... Andy doesn't know what to make of him. Because he basically says, hey, so I went to this gay bar where basically anybody can do whatever they want. Took a dude home. We banged a bunch. We may have hit each other because you can see my face.
Yeah.
But I don't address it. I just want my Oscar back. So then Andy's just trying to fill out the forms, and the guy's trying to be helpful, but he doesn't understand.
Well, you come to find out, kind of, that, like, the guy's lonely.
Yeah, he's going downward. His career is dropped, because he's done
writing.
Well,
his career's pretty much over.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he has really, like, he's basically, like, well, we'll get to it near the end, but Andy and him talk, and he basically says, like, I'm getting old, and Andy's like, dude, everyone gets old, doesn't mean you have to stop.
Yeah.
Kind of, which I liked. But, okay, so this leads to another thing, that Kelly is a psychopath.
Okay.
Because he is following Lukowsky.
Yeah, he's straight up following her, stalking her.
Yeah, just to see what she's doing. Like, he is a psychopath.
This is a mutually destructive relationship on the level of Dexter and that arsonist bitch.
Was she an arsonist?
She set shit on fire. That's the definition of an arsonist.
I didn't remember what she did. Those episodes were really dumb.
Yeah, she was basically a British model that also set things on fire. It was one of their worst written seasons, I think. Besides the last one.
So he's following her everywhere. The daughter comes in of the parent people who were killed, mm-hmm. and Sipowicz interviews her. And finds out that she dated a black guy from the Bronx. So
now,
she's like, I need a name and number.
And
which is fine. I have no problems with the way he handled this.
It's an important discussion, though, because Sipowicz, the description of the assailants... Wow. Unnecessary to use that word. The description of the guys who did this are four black dudes. That's all they have. Four black men. So they have to, and they know it was a tip-off, because why would these guys come from the Bronx down to their area to do it?
Yeah.
So they have to figure out, how do these guys learn about this house? So they have to go by every lead. They bring in the daughter, who just found out her parents were killed, and raped post-mortem. And Sipowicz says, do you have any low-income black friends, basically? And he's trying to find...
He never says black, though, which I thought was a big step for him.
What, he didn't use black?
Yeah, he didn't basically come out and say, like, hey, do you have any, like, poor black friends? He's just like, do you have any friends that don't cover the same, like, socioeconomic class that you do?
Mm-hmm. He's trying to be nice, for one, because she's not a suspect. She's a victim. And two, he's not he's just like chasing down these leads. Mm-hmm. So he's just trying to get any information. So he finds out that she dated this black guy who was kind of from the Bronx and had a couple of rough looking friends. But no big deal.
So he calls in the guy.
Yes. And it's not a super famous face, but his name...
He's been in some other things.
His name is Clifton Powell, as Louis Futrell, and he kind of kills it in this.
He does his character well, but Andy questions him.
It's a slight interrogation, but more of a questioning than an interrogation.
This is what I came away with from that questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Sipowicz did nothing wrong.
No, of course not.
He wasn't racist in any way.
He got a little racist towards the end, I think, but not intentionally hurtful racist.
He wasn't racist in any way.
Uh-huh.
He did the job like he was supposed to. He asked fair questions. The kid got upset, which is fine because he's probably like, why am I here for just being black? Which basically is why Andy has him there.
Mm-hmm.
But he has him there because this is the only way to do it. I understand that. I get it. The George Washington Carver comment.
Well, those three different comments kind of hit hard a little bit.
Well,
because I wrote them down.
The two before it are just Andy's white privilege talking. I don't think that's his racism talking. I think that's his white privilege as his male white privilege talking, being like, look, I get it. We're sorry for slavery. It wasn't my fault. Like that kind of shit. That's his white privilege talking. But the George Washington Carver comment, that's a little bit under the skin. That's taking it to a whole nother level, I think.
Okay, I'm not going to win any points with the black community for this. I don't think Andy had any malicious intent in what he said. I think Andy was expressing his frustration at the situation at hand, which is, I have dead people that have been raped and whatnot, and their shit's been stolen. I brought this guy in because it's the only lead I have, and he's calling me racist. Not only is he calling me racist, he is being the most difficult person when all I'm trying to do is get a little bit of information, and then he's out of my hair.
Yeah, but I don't think Andy portrays that well. I think when Andy asks him about, like, I don't remember the exact term, but the way he asks him if he has any hood friends, basically, like... It kind of gets to a point where it's like, dude, come on. Like,
well, no, the guy, the way
ways to ask your questions, and there's better phrasing. Like,
I don't think there's,
you know what I mean. And Andy
doesn't
really make it up forthright and upcoming, saying like, look, we're not looking at you. Like, we just want to know, did you talk to anybody? And like, he's not really good at explaining situations like that. Well,
anyway. I don't know. I mean, I am sympathetic for him because of how hard he's working on this thing. His partner is fucking stalking his girlfriend.
Yeah.
We have
his partner's not crazy.
He has no leads, and then the guy comes in and basically he drops the N-bomb himself. That's another thing. They use the N-word in this episode, and it's like hard N-word.
Well, yeah, because we talked about it earlier, but because Sipowicz is making him feel like that.
True, but he's not, like, I don't know. I mean, it's two people in a frustrating situation meeting head-on, and it's creating conflict. It's just, I don't think either of them's at fault. It's just, I don't think Sipowicz's comments are that bad, because he's trying to prove a point, that he's not there to fuck up his day. He's there to figure out who killed these people, and all the guy needs to do is answer three really important questions, and then
I know,
we're done.
But you also have to keep in mind of the time that they're living in, and I think New York around that time was very like there was very on edge with race at the time, race and the police. It was a tougher place to live. Crime was up. Police were tougher. So you have to keep all of that in your mind about how like some people get dealt with, especially. This is going just what the character is, because he's studying architecture at Hunter College. You know, he talks about how, like, so this kid's, like, living his life thinking that he's not being the black person that should always be bugged by the police, you know, and yet he's still here being bugged, and he's still here being judged, even though he feels he's being a good person and doing things the right way. So I can see why he got frustrated in the interview. Get that. But here's the thing, I don't get it because I'm not a black person or a black man who's had to be constantly judged and looked at differently. So I don't know how that feels, but I get why he's upset.
Because I just
I think we can skip something real quick. Fast forward to when he comes back to the station.
Mm-hmm.
We won't say how they solve it, but let's just say they solve it. He, the black kid, finds out. He comes back to the station. When he confronts Andy, he's in the wrong.
Yeah, because he's starting shit for no reason whatsoever.
Yes, and then when Fancy comes up and like basically says like, "Hey, are you done here?" And then that guy says to Andy like, "Oh, I wish we could go outside and fight." Basically, and Andy has a pretty good comeback. He goes, "Hold on a second, let me get my card."
Mm.
To say like, "Hey, if you call me when you're ready to fight." Like, that's one thing I like about Andy. He never backs down from a fight. But then Fancy says like, "Oh, you need to go." And the kid looks at him and he's like, "Oh, look, they got you working in the big house."
Mm-hmm.
Which means like that's like this big slave house.
Yeah, he also changes the tone of his voice almost like a southern.
Yeah, and he goes, what door do they let you come in, boy?"
Yeah.
And then you see, and this is where I say you see a lot about who Fancy is, because Fancy just politely is like, "Hey, you," he's like, "if you're done here, you gotta go."
And you know what? We're skipping around, but it's okay, because if you're listening to our show and you don't have Amazon, or you're not watching the show with us, something's wrong, because the show's great, and you should be watching it, period. But at the end of this episode, we have another great race conversation, but it's between Fancy and Sipowicz.
I think we should wait till we get to that. We should clear up everything else.
Fine. But I will say this. I just checked. This episode aired December 1993. The Rodney King riots in Los Angeles happened in 1992.
Yeah.
So I understand.
And New York was a tough time. New York was a tougher place back then with crime. A lot of people talk about back then, like, prostitution ran rampant. That's why there's so many prostitutes. It's so weird when they talk about prostitutes here or there. You can go out and get one so easily. It's like, and it's not like that here anymore. So you also have the thing of the time. But, okay, so in between when that's going on,
mm-hmm.
Martinez finds out that the maid has actually been stopped on a stop and frisk twice and stop questioned and frisk. About drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So Martinez is showing that he's a good detective. So he basically saves Kelly. He basically solves the case for Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And Sipowicz, because Sipowicz is now dealing with two cases, but Sipowicz is going off on a different path with different info. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Then the Lukowski thing is getting ridiculous. They keep like being fucking weird. They find out that the maid gave her drug, like the maid had a drug dealer come, so they catch the drug dealer. He helps them catch the four kids that did it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a weird way that they got them.
Well, yeah, it's because the drug dealer doesn't know exactly where they live, but he knows the building. Because
they went into the wrong house first, right?
Yeah, and Sipowicz has that great line because they bust open the door, the guy's taking a shit, and he goes,
yeah.
"What did you eat, some kind of wild game?" and then when they realize they don't know the room and they can't go through every room checking, they just say, "Give them a call and say that the cops are on their way so that they'll come out." And then they come out and they bust them.
And Sipowicz has found the statue. We forgot to say that. He called in a pawn buddy of his, and they worked together and they found the statue. Which, that shows, like, I like when Sipowicz deals with, like, lower class people, I guess I'm going to say.
Street level people?
Yeah, street level people, yeah. He has a good rapport with them.
He has good connections. That's one of the reasons Sipowicz is a badass character. He has connections with the lower, seedier levels of New York, but they trust him because he's not an asshole. Like, he's still a stand-up guy. He's not going to fuck you over the second you turn your back on him. But, because we talked about why is this episode called Oscar Mayer Wiener? We know the Oscar because there's an Oscar involved, and we know a Wiener because it involves gay sex. Mayer is because the guy he talked to, Sammy, his full name is Sammy Mayer. I just looked up the character name, looking up for the guy that played Futrell.
Yeah.
And I saw that the...
Oh, so the gay kid that steals the Oscar, his last name's Mayer?
No, the guy who runs the pawn shop is named Mayer.
Oh.
The guy who tried to get Donna Abundondo to sell him the pennant for like 40 bucks, even though it's
bucks.
Signed by two players from a championship game. That was Johnny Williams playing Sammy Mayer.
That's clever then. Oscar Mayer Wiener. That's pretty clever.
Mm-hmm.
But she's offended when he's like, "I'll give you 40 bucks for it."
Well, because she's a fan. That's just like if somebody, what's a good example? If somebody saw my community script, because Kyle's wonderful, great, fantastic girlfriend worked at a place where she could get me a community script signed by the cast. I have it in my desk drawer. If someone offered me like $100, I'd be like, go fuck yourself. Like, I'm never going to sell this thing.
No, that's true.
Like, you're out of your goddamn mind. I'm going to keep this forever. I wanted to talk about one thing. Oh, there's a part that's really important when you talk about partnership, because there's a couple partner things in this episode. Lukowski and Kelly are having contention because Lukowski wants to take care of this informant deal by herself, and Kelly wants to help, but she won't let him.
Yeah.
So one thing that happens is he comes back to the station, and Fancy asks him and Sipowicz, hey, where are you guys at? And the truth is Kelly has nothing because he's been following his fucking girlfriend around.
Yeah. Being a psycho.
So he says basically, oh, I've been running down other leads. And Sipowicz gives his side of what he's been doing. And then they sit down, and then Sipowicz is like, so what's going on? And he's like, oh, nothing. He's like, don't talk to me like a jerk, because he knows something's wrong.
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, I'm just taking care of something. It's going to be over soon. He's like, thanks for taking care of me. And then Sipowicz is like, yeah, if I keep it up for like 3 or 4 years, then we'll be even. Because he acknowledges like, hey, we're partners. You helped me out for a long time. I'll help you out. It's just, you got to let me know what's happening so I'm not confused. So I have something to say when people ask. But the other part, and this is the part that made me think about a very burning question, but I'll ask it after. Towards the very end, Kelly and Sipowicz have a conversation in the bathroom where he kind of admits, like, hey, she's into some deep shit and I just want to help her.
Yeah.
And then he asks his ex-wife, by the way, Lori's back, if anyone cares.
Yeah, she's the new writing DA.
DA is if anyone gives a shit that she's back in the room. Her face is so robotic, it's unbelievable. She makes, like, no emotions at all during her entire run on this episode.
She's hotter than Lukowski, though.
I'll agree to that. But you would go for Costas, right? You're Costas all the way. You're all about that Greekness.
But it's her personality, though.
It's not even attractive, like, level? It's not even attractiveness?
No. She's like, okay, so I think Lori's more attractive.
Uh-huh.
But I think
Do you think Lori's more attractive than, you know what? We're doing it. Marry, fuck, kill. Abundando.
Oh.
Lori. Costas.
Kill Lori. Fuck Abundando. Marry Costas.
Okay. Let's change one thing. Take out Costas. Put in Lukowski. Lukowski, Abundando.
Kill Lukowski. Just put Abundando where Costas is.
What does that mean? You'd fuck her?
No, marry her. Marry.
You'd rather marry Abundando than Lori?
Marry Lori. Marry Lori, fuck Abundando.
Really? Well, okay, that's actually more surprising. You'd rather marry Lori than Abundando?
You can't marry Abundando.
Why?
She ain't getting married. She ain't getting tied down to no man.
How do you know?
This ain't happening.
Alright. Well, if the fake tits fit.
And plus, Lori's a fucking lawyer. We got that.
She can't keep a job. What are the first 10 things we talked about?
For some reason, she could keep a job. She just bounces around all the time. But she gets the job. She keeps getting checks. She's making her paper. So she's getting paid somehow. She's able to afford an apartment.
One thing I wanted to ask, I guess, deep burning question. Why can't David Caruso deliver lines standing straight up? Every single scene he's in, he's either bent over or he's doing a head thing. Bent over or doing a head thing.
He's bent over like a grandfather.
Like, he can't just... Sipowicz has a couple, like, standard sits and, like, stands and walks. Kelly's standards is, like, when I sit, I bend over as far as I can and look out of the side of my eye.
Yeah. Or if I gotta talk to Andy and I'm standing up, I make a 90-degree angle with my body where I'm basically laying on the desk talking to him.
Yeah, I
do. Because I can't stand straight up and talk to him for some reason.
Yeah, I don't understand why. Because there was one scene specifically where he was talking to somebody standing up, but for no reason whatsoever. His entire head was like he was laying it down on a pillow, but the rest of his body was up.
He talks to James Martinez a lot like that.
It's like, what are you doing? What's the point of that? So, yeah, that's the only burning question. So, before we wrap up with final thoughts, do you want to talk about the ribs scene?
Yeah, go ahead.
So,
I want to see what you took away from that scene first.
So, Fancy he asks Sipowicz out to ribs, which
After Futrell yells at both of them.
And I didn't know this, maybe because, you know, I just don't really focus on racial stereotypes as much. Is ribs a big black thing? Just ribs?
I don't know if it's ribs. I know that, like, the stereotype is that they like barbecue.
But don't white people really like barbecue, too?
Yeah, so that's what I don't know, because maybe back then it was a racial thing, because in an earlier episode, Andy says, it's not like we're going to go out and have ribs together.
Yeah, that was just a plant for this moment, I think.
Yeah, but I think it was supposed to be like a well-known stereotype that black people like ribs.
It did not make sense to me.
It didn't hit home to me.
But they go to this barbecue joint, and it is like the black barbecue joint. Like,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, people, like, there's no real sensitive way to say it. People in this country and in every country, they associate together. Like, they don't do it out of malice. Like, people who grow up in a community, they'll associate with each other. Like, it's probably not completely out of the realm of possibility that a white person has gone to that barbecue place. It's just predominantly black people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and I just don't think that white people are going there a whole lot.
So, the scene's there, like, the scene opens, a ton of black people eating barbecue, and then Sipowicz is eating across from Fancy, and Sipowicz...
some of them are looking at him.
Well, yeah, just because it's kind of a weird duo.
Yeah.
A pretty tall, like, well-put-together black man, and then Sipowicz, who's basically, like, a hedgehog. Fancy is trying to ask him, like, a normal dinner conversation, like, how's your ribs?
Yeah.
And Sipowicz takes it like he's being made fun of. He's being put on display.
He's being poked at, yeah. He's like the dog in the cage being poked.
And he basically, he snaps at him. Sipowicz does snap at him. He's like, are you enjoying this, huh? Look,
your job is off this?
Like,
that's what he says.
He's like, I have a right to my opinions, and I ran that case correctly. And he's like, I got no problem with the way you run the case.
And that surprised Sipowicz. The look on his face is he was like, then why am I here? Because
he thought it was a punishment. He thought it was a punishment that the boss was bringing him to a place like this.
Yeah.
And Fancy's like, I thought you may just want a meal. Because he felt bad. It was clearly Fancy saying, hey man, that was fucked up. You didn't do anything wrong. I'm letting you know that I'm okay with what happened, and I'm okay with you as a person. Because I like you in the squad now. You got your shit together. He solved almost two cases that day. He solved the Oscar guy, and he's a part of the solving of the murders.
Yeah.
So the dude gets his shit done. So then they have this kind of discussion about how awkward it is to be black in America as compared to a white guy in the barbecue joint.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the coolest written dialogues of race in the show. Where Fancy kind of breaks it down and says, what, you feel like you're being watched? Like, everything you do might be wrong to somebody else? Like, maybe you're not in the right place?
Are these people spitting in my food? Are these people not?
Yeah, and it's a very cool conversation.
And then then the best line is like a mic drop line. He goes, now imagine if those people had guns and badges.
Which is so true.
And then he just kind of looks at him and then he goes, eat. He kind of does that, like, mom thing.
Eat.
Like, after you get schooled, he's like, eat. It's getting cold. Like, eat. Like, come on and eat. Like, there ain't nothing you can do about it. He kills it, yeah.
It's such a good scene. And that moment, that scene with Fancy just cemented, because there are essentially three lieutenants. Well, four, if you count the most annoying one with the bird. I don't count him. You know, you remember?
Oh, Eddie? You don't count Eddie? That's what I was trying to think of the last episode. Eddie.
Yeah, I don't count Eddie at all. Because Eddie is there for like three episodes and then he's gone. I count Fancy. I can never remember the Latino guy's name. I know it was Isai Morales. I can never remember his name.
He was a cool lieutenant too. I liked him. He was there for only a minute though. He wasn't there that long. And then it was that weird guy.
Eddie?
No.
Wasn't it a woman?
Episode.
Oh, that weird guy that stays on for a while. Yeah, I don't remember his name. That was during the sinking season. That's what I've coined the last season. It's sinking. It's some of it's good, some of it's bad, but it's sinking.
Yeah.
And there's really nothing we can do about it except, like, let it sink.
Hold on.
But Fancy is my favorite lieutenant because right there you see he cares about his workers. He has his head on straight about the way the world really is. but he also does his work right.
Yeah.
Like, when that guy pops off in the thing and he starts throwing out the N-word and making everybody super uncomfortable, Fancy comes out and goes, hey, like, I'm another black guy. Like, this isn't... like, hey,
I'm black too.
Like, you're out of line, man. Like, this isn't what you think it is. This isn't a race.
Well, and then when that guy gets in his face and basically calls him an Uncle Tom,
yeah,
Fancy handles it with the way of just saying, like, just go, man. Like, I know who I am, but just get out of here.
Yeah, we don't need your nonsense.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything else we need to talk about?
I'm trying to think if there are any. No, it's just starting to get better.
It is. It's starting to get a lot better.
It's starting to get character driven, and you're starting to see actors be more comfortable with the characters they have. Like, you kind of see Sipwood starting to pan out. You see Fancy panning out. As much as I hate him, Metavoy's starting to get his character. Mm-hmm. Martinez is, like, I think Martinez is an underrated detective.
Yeah, he was always a good. If, like, you have your starting, starring roles, and then you have, like, your bench players or your B-level cast, he's right up there. Like, him and Fancy and Medavoy and Abadondo, they're all on point, and even Costas. Like, they're all together. The thing that...
Costas is a main player. Watch yourself.
Well, she isn't yet. She isn't a main player yet.
When she's there, she's a main player.
Okay. I struck a nerve. What are you going to do about the episode where she dies? Spoilers.
I've dealt with it.
I probably
won't watch it, or I'll fast forward through that part.
I think it's insane because of how quick it is. We'll talk about it when it happens. We'll compare
it. I'll just say this. It doesn't sting as much because you're still not over the death of Bobby Simone. That's all that, like, you know what I mean?
All right.
It's kind of like you have this, like, horrific death of, like, the one person you love in your life, and then, like, 4 days later, someone else you really care for dies. Like, you're still in that hole. You're not going to have as much of a reaction as you would have if it was a while later.
I'm going
to
record it.
So where did we leave off in the episode? Oh, the ribs thing.
I mean, we kind of put it to bed. I think.
I took that conversation as Andy. I felt Andy was too defensive about his racism.
But you still work under the idea that he's racist. I don't think he's racist. I think he was uncomfortable.
Oh, man. Yes, I think he is. I think he thinks white people are better than black people.
All right. Well, I disagree with you.
I think he does. I don't think that he treats them any differently. But when you break it down to its bare bones, he doesn't look at everyone equally. He thinks that white people are better than minorities, or in this case, black people. Which is racist.
All right. I mean, I don't agree with you, but that's fine.
No, Kirk. What I'm trying to say is I think I see where you're coming from, where you see that even, like, when he's a cop, he does everything by the book. When he does, like, you do, when you break it down for him, you treat people, no matter who they are, equally the same way, boom, boom, boom. That's how he lives. But if you took all that way and you just asked him a simple question, I think that he would think that white people are better than black people.
All right. Is there anything else?
But I can see where you can kind of make an argument, but I still think so. But no, there's nothing else.
Nothing else. AstroBrothersPodcast.com, where you can find every episode of this, NYPD Blue Balls, and the Astro Brothers Podcast, the regular show. On Twitter at AstroBrosPod. I'm at KirkHasGlasses. If you want to talk to just me, I don't know why you would. I'm not that interesting. But, Kyle, is there anything that you would like to say or recommend with the people's ears?
Yeah, Netflix has all of the seasons of House.
They do?
Netflix has every single Hugh season Laurie. Of House up there, so go and watch them. I own the first two seasons. They're killer.
All right. Well, that's a good recommendation. Isn't there some weird theory that he might be Doogie Howser?
That's impossible because Doogie Howser wasn't British.
Isn't House not British on the show? I thought he was American on the show.
Oh, yeah, but I'm sorry, you're right. I was thinking of where they live, though.
Oh.
And Doogie Howser never, like, had a sickness that Hike House did.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Be good to each other.
Don't be good to each other. I don't care. It's your life.
Bye.